Conditions for children in the east of the Democratic Republic of Congo are dire. I don't think anybody would disagree with that, especially for children who've been displaced. It's estimated that in the east of the DRC, there are about 5 million people who are displaced. And of those 5 million, 3 million are children. And in the province we visited, Ituri, we came across a whole new round of displacements, 30,000 people displaced from two towns. A lot of those people had made their way to the provincial capital, Bunia. More had gone to go and stay with friends and families in what's called the host communities. But for those people who are displaced who don't have friends and families to go and stay with, they tend to go to camps. There are two very large camps in Bunia, each together holding about 20,000 people. And the girl that we followed, a 12-year-old, had been displaced from a town about 100 kilometres from Bunia. She'd had to find her own transport to get to Bunia. She was unaccompanied. Her parents had been killed earlier. She was living with her grandmother. And during the attack by an armed group, she was separated from her grandmother and had no choice but to find her own transport to Bunia and went into a very large camp for displaced people entirely by herself. So you can imagine how traumatic that would be for a small child.
Absolutely. And what is fueling this conflict? Who are the people perpetuating this violence?
It's a very tricky question because in the east of Congo, there are various armed groups, some of whom have political or ideological objectives, others, I'm afraid, a little more than criminal groups. But in each part of each rural area of the east of the DRC, the likelihood is that some armed groups or several armed groups are operating. For example, we have what's known as the Allied Democratic Front, the ADF, who are accused of being an Islamic group. There isn't an awful lot of evidence to suggest that they're jihadists, but they certainly have Islamic sympathies. And then there are other groups fighting for local autonomy, other groups fighting for the promotion of their particular tribal group or their particular community group, for them to have more influence. So it's a very complicated mishmash of armed groups that operate in this part of the world.
And what needs to be done in the short term and, you know, I guess ultimately in the long term to avoid further suffering of these children? I assume that aside from finding immediate safety and food, that there are other things that need to be done for their rehabilitation and eventual resettlement.
Yes, yeah, so I think for children like the 12-year-old I was telling you about, they need psychosocial support, you know, for the trauma they've witnessed. There's an awful lot of children here who've witnessed trauma, children who've witnessed machete attacks, children who've seen their villages attacked with bullets flying in the air and people being killed. So those children need some kind of psychosocial support. Beyond that, I think on a sort of wider scale, there's an urgent necessity for the Congolese government and the Congolese army to establish some degree of law and order in areas of the country, especially in the east, where they have absolutely no control. And they are trying to do that because in provinces like North Kivu, South Kivu, Ituri, the government have introduced a sort of military administration, a kind of lesser form of martial law, I guess you can call it. And the idea is that the army will fight much more determinedly against the various armed groups that are operating. But as I say, they've got a huge task, because vast tracts of the east of the DRC are in the control of armed groups.
And what is UNICEF doing to reunite these children with their parents? What kind of resources is UNICEF seeking or asking for from the international community?
To reunite children is problematic because invariably what happens is that the children who have fled areas of fighting, and because they fled the areas of fighting, it's quite difficult for aid agencies to go there. But again, referring to the 12-year-old I was telling you about, UNICEF are trying to reunite her, the 12-year-old, with her grandmother. The trouble is no one knows where the grandmother's gone, or I'm afraid, even if she's still alive. So that's what they're trying to do in the short term. And they'll do that by either providing the children with a foster family who can look after them until they can be reunited, or in some cases where there's no chance of them being reunited, there'll be various centres operated by UNICEF and its partners that look after children who are effectively orphaned. As far as the response from the international community is concerned, there's a shortage of cash here. I mean, the UN, the overall UN effort to help displaced people in the East is chronically underfunded. It has less than half the amount of funds it needs. So UNICEF is looking for funding, and other UN agencies are looking for funding from the international community. And I think that the part of the problem is there's a sense of compassion fatigue here, because the problems of Eastern Congo have dragged on for a long time. They're decades old. And there might be that some donors are sort of thinking, well, it's gone on for so long, it doesn't make any difference if we provide money. But it does make a difference, and it makes a difference to the 12-year-old child I was telling you about, because without that funding, she'd have received no help whatsoever. She's not receiving a great deal as it is, but at least she's receiving something, and that's largely thanks to the efforts of the international community and Congolese NGOs who are working on her behalf.